Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, Brian Wimpen, host of Thugmetrics, and good to be back again. Hope everybody's having a great day. I know everybody's running around getting ready for whichever, you know, whatever their, it's either your weekend or your holiday, depends on when we air the show that might be coming up. Maybe it's just a quiet afternoon or morning on the weekend at home. Whatever it is, I hope you enjoy it. So, wanted to introduce our guest for today, Mr. Michael Harms. He's the Executive Director of Operations from TDN2K out of Dallas, Texas. Welcome to Thugmetrics.
Thanks, Brian.
So, tell us, first of all, obviously it's a show, we have a show about big data, data intelligence, you know, whatever term, you know, we all decide to use or don't. And so, but first of all, tell us a little bit about your organization. Who you work for, kind of a little, you know, because I think it's got a very interesting story. You've been around a long time, kind of the leader in the space. And so I think that is worth a little bit of time to get us started.
Sure. Again, as you mentioned, I work for a Dallas-based company, and we're kind of a niche analytics firm, and we've actually been in this game for 20 years, just celebrating our 20th anniversary. So we have been around for a little while in doing this. We like to joke that we're not into big data so much as maybe medium-sized data. But again, it's you know, at the end of the day, the numbers are the numbers, math is math, data is data. And again, there's a lot of applications for this, uses for it, and it's kind of interesting to watch this, you know, the new uses of technology develop, what you can do with some of the information that wasn't available 20 years ago, and how it's kind of coming of age, and people are really taking a new interest in data analytics. So really what we do is we focus on service sector companies, and we help analyze and benchmark their performance against each other. So we get companies to kind of aggregate their data, you know, under the veil of privacy that we provide, and we help them make sense of how they're performing relative to similar types of organizations. And we do that on both human resources metrics, performance, and financial analytics, and then we're kind of delving to the social space as well. So it's kind of evolved from a you know, much simpler and smaller data set to a much more robust kind of platform and what we can do as well. So it is really interesting.
So what's what kind of first question that comes to mind is variety or volume of data more important?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, just to put a qualifier on everything, I guess it depends. You know, obviously the more volume you have, you know, a lot of the time the more confidence you have in what you're reporting. It gives you kind of a wider spectrum of to see the outliers or what constitutes the norm. At the same time, you know, one data point or one element doesn't always tell the story. You know, we live in a multivariable world. So you know, that's a really interesting question, but I like to have both. I like to have my hands on as much as I can get of both, and then we can make sense of it. But you know, obviously there are certain data points depending on what you're looking at that are more important than others. But that's really an interesting way to look at it. I think that what we're seeing is, you know, over the past few years, we've seen really a fire hose of information get turned on from a, you know, from a trickle. And the ability to transport and collect this information has made the volume issue a really big deal, and how you handle that volume of information. There's a lot of new technology out there that's kind of exciting and frightening at the same time. But yeah, I think that the volume is definitely important. But you've, at the end of the day, you've got to be looking at the right things.
So, and kind of to go a little further in that stream of thought, internal versus external data, and how you marry or intersect those, and make that into something like worthwhile. Kind of how what's the thought process as you talk to your clients and you think about it personally, you know, as you're jumping into these big, you know, multivariable sets of data?
Well, that's another interesting dilemma that we often face is, you know, sometimes the macro information, it's kind of boring or old hat to people, but yet it's very important. And when you can start marrying that micro data with the macro data is where sometimes you find some really interesting things. And, you know, especially if you're talking about the business world or you know, economic development and business performance, stuff like that, where, you know, there's a clear correlation between kind of the macroeconomic performance or some of that external data which you have, which everyone has access to, or even the social space, you know, people's comments are out there for everyone to see, and what does that mean? And that's where you really get into that interesting space, because we're living kind of in that micro or customized world where we really want to know, you know, what's going on at a very granular level. And I think that's where we've kind of, you know, gotten to this interesting space with, again, the new technology, the new tools, as we can use some of that. And oftentimes it is internal information. You tie it to that external information, and you look for the things that matter. And I think that's really the crux of all of the big data, or just the metrics and analytics, is, you know, tell me what matters. You know, we're collecting all this information. You know, you have all this new data, this new tools at your disposal, and your goal is to make sense of the world and what's going on. So, you know, the point of this is to kind of step back and figure out, you know, what's going on. And I think at the end of the day, everyone wants predictability, right? Whether it's in business or life, the weather, the stock market, you know, relationships, just as, you know, people, we crave predictability and kind of foresight, so we know what to expect. You know, no one likes to be caught off guard. And again, that's the point of analyzing all this information, is to sort the stuff that's interesting from the stuff that matters, and the stuff that people will pay for if you're a business and you're relying on this to put food on your table.
Sure. And you brought up social, kind of the new, you know, obviously the layer of social data via the social platform, social technology that's out there, social media technology. How is social sensing and that whole layer of data that's now really, it's personal consumer data that is really putting pressure and insight and just doing so many different, is taking the dimension of how you can look at your business and behaviors and flipped it kind of on its head. I mean, we're in the early stages. How is that affecting like your sector? Because you're a service sector, hospitality sector business. So I would assume it's gigantic, but still fairly in its infancy. So how is it affecting you guys? How should you be thinking? We should be thinking about it.
Yeah, and again, to give everyone a little better idea, is we deal with a lot of restaurants and their performance, how they're doing. And obviously there are a lot of restaurants. And now when people have a platform to say how they feel about their meal or their service, or they're taking pictures and posting them on Instagram, there are just reams of information and feedback for operators that they didn't have, you know, just a few years ago. I mean, the scale is just, you know, exponentially exploded. So again, making sense of what does it mean when someone takes a picture of their cheeseburger or their dessert, if they make a comment on Twitter or Facebook, you know, how do you translate that into, was this a good thing, was this a bad thing, how did this reflect in my performance, does this reflect poorly on, you know, the service they received, the food quality. You know, there's a million factors you can really read from this. So kind of trying to read the tea leaves, and we're really at the starting point of doing that. And, you know, we all like to think we've got it figured out, but it really is kind of an interesting new dawn in this I would say, art and science of trying to glean the proper feedback and, again, what it means. As you said, you know, you're getting that feedback at a micro level. So we're really looking to figure out what are the correlations between some of that feedback and both the volume and what they're talking about. So it really is kind of an interesting, you know, new day for that sort of analysis. And we're just kind of getting our feet wet in that and seeing where it takes us.
Is the speed, because obviously social data is coming in, it's real and raw, and what considerations, you know, do you think about or should we be thinking about to deal with that type of data versus everything else, you know, in the business sector? It's usually not real time. It's usually put through, you know, set up in a matrix, you know, a question and answer type matrix that you're pulling from, whether it's point of sale or, you know, whatever the case may be. So how does social data, does it get treated differently?
Well, you know, you're spot on again there. It's, you know, I think the speed is very important because we're really moving towards kind of a call and response world. You know, you hear the buzzword, the Internet of Things. I hate that term. But it, you know, again, that customized world we're living in, and you know, you think of like the Nest thermostat, where it kind of learns when you turn the heat on or off, or when you're cold or when you're hot, and then it can kind of preempt, you know, your temperature variability there, and you know, when you can make it second nature, that's great. But when you're dealing with, you know, a giant mass of consumers who are all giving you feedback, it gets a little trickier. But I think that's where everyone wants it, right? They want that kind of call and response where, you know, someone comments and you can respond to it immediately. Like, you did not like your service, you did not like the way, you know, you were treated, or, you know, something disappointed you. We can respond to it on the fly. And, you know, that's where, you know, Twitter has become, you know, a huge platform for, from airlines to, again, to basically any customer-facing enterprise can get feedback immediately via Twitter. It's just a matter of handling the volume and seeing what that means. I think the other thing you have to deal with is, you know, people may be more prone to voice their displeasure than voice their pleasure on some of these platforms. So you've got to take that into consideration as well when you're trying to decipher, you know, what some of this means. But I do think the speed and the immediacy of both the feedback and how a customer can respond to the feedback, you know, that's really a game changer. You know, if someone does something to upset you and you're able to respond to that immediately and show that, you know, their happiness does matter to you, that makes a lot bigger difference than if you get an I'm sorry, you know, 6 weeks down the road after it's filtered through a few layers of bureaucracy. So I think the speed is again another one of those game changers, along with the volume.
Excellent perspective on that. Data governance. Who typically or historically has owned data analysis in organizations? And is that changing, and do you see it changing in the future, that way down the road? There's three questions there, by the way.
Okay.
You're a smart guy, Michael.
I'll try to remember all three of those.
Yeah, me too.
But I do think it has changed. And, again, different companies, different industries, you know, we have the pleasure of working with a lot of different companies of varying size. And what's really fascinating is you see companies that place a large emphasis on data and internal systems and companies that don't value it as much. So again, that's kind of personal taste of management styles. You know, maybe some of it's transition, some of it's just resources they have at their disposal. At the end of the day, though, we are seeing, I think, a general trend to where, you know, the IT teams are becoming more and more robust when it comes to this. You know, they're designing a lot more systems. Companies are implementing more systems. We're seeing more chief technology officers than we've ever seen before. We're seeing companies starting to develop analytic teams, you know, that their sole purpose is to analyze information from both internal and external resources, marrying them together. I mean, it's been a really quick change that we've seen over, I'd say, the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, and I think that's going to continue to develop, and the companies that don't follow along that pattern are going to find themselves falling behind. So I think that, you know, there's been a clear change, a renewed emphasis on, you know, the importance of information and metrics and analytics, because, again, they really do help you run your company better. So what was the second question?
I think you answered all three like in one fell swoop. That was pretty slick. I gotta admit.
Well, so, I'm all hopped up on Red Bull, so I'm just knocking things out left and right.
Oh man, I am not a fan. I took Red Bull to the limit one time, and since then I can't even hear the word anymore. Sorry, folks, at Red Bull, but that's cracking a can.
Well, my apologies.
So where can data go horribly wrong for companies? And then I'm gonna give you that question. Let's think for a second. And then I'm also gonna get into a data security question, like all in the news, obviously, with Hollywood and Sony Pictures and foreign governments. I mean, data, big data, data security is a big topic at the moment. So we'll start out with the little question, and then we'll move on to the big question.
Well, first of all, where data can go wrong, I think it was the famous Mark Twain quote that gets bandied about all the time about, you know, lies, damn lies, and statistics. I think that sometimes, you know, companies, they look at the metrics, they look at the data, and they don't like what they see. And, you know, it's like owning a scale, and you stand on it every morning. You don't like the number, so you stop using the scale.
Right.
So I think that's one way in which companies can go wrong, is they can just stop using it because they don't like the output. Or, you know, maybe they've got bonuses tied to performance, and the performance isn't what they want it to be. So, you know, shoot the messenger, right? That's one way. I think the other one is, and I think this one is that all of us on both sides of the table really need to be careful of, is just kind of that hubris, I would say. You know, just because you have some insight or you have that information, you have these tools, and the dawn of analytics and the day of this has kind of come, we think that we have this information. It kind of makes us God, that we now have all the answers, and the numbers don't lie. And, if you've got to be very, very wary of that, because, again, if you're one of the things we say too when we're collecting data on the scale is, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right? If there's something wrong with the information you're looking at, then the decisions you make or the output you get is going to be very flawed, you know, and we see this a lot too. So you got to be very careful about what you're looking at, and you have to have, you know, a strong confidence in what you're looking at, and just be grounded enough to realize that you know, it's a tool, and it's going to give you some insight, some predictability, some foresight, but it's not the be-all, end-all. So I think just, you know, remaining grounded when you're looking at this often helps as well. Then when you're talking about, you know, the security component, it's a frightening world out there. I just read an article in the Wall Street Journal that referenced, again, the Internet of Things and how they felt like 2014 was when, you know, that kind of came to fruition, where more and more devices were connecting to the Internet, that information is being shared, and while it has some amazing you know, possibilities there to make life better for all of humanity, there's also some terrifying aspects of that, because that information, it's just out there. And, you know, if you have some determined hackers, they're going to get to that information somehow, some way. And, again, as we become more and more reliant on automated systems for our power and water supply and how we run our businesses and our personal information, our health information, you know, again, the possibility exists that there are repercussions to that that can really come back to bite us in the end. And it's kind of frightening. And, you know, again, we've seen what's happened with Sony and with, you know, Home Depot and Target and a lot of these companies with credit card transactions. And, you know, you start thinking about that if it's your water supply or it's your electrical grid or if you've got a self-driving car. You know, there's a lot of scary things that could happen. And even, you know, on a much smaller scale, if you're a business and you have intellectual property or private information, the fact that people are out there, you know, nosing around for it, it's a little disconcerting. And, you know, I think most companies that are in this space do take it very seriously. You know, I know we feel like we have a ethical and moral obligation to do the right thing with that information. I know sometimes that, you know, that kind of gets cast by the wayside in the capitalist system. But I think that there's been kind of renewed interest in making sure that we are doing the right thing with some of that information. And you've seen more and more people get uncomfortable with that. You know, some people are saying, you know, I don't want Google with all my information. It makes me a little uneasy. What are they doing with that? So I think there is a large onus on the people doing the data collecting and doing the analysis because, again, there's a scary new world out there.
Great, great narrative on that. So, I've never asked this question before, but you're just a guy. What's your favorite algorithm?
My favorite algorithm? Oh man,
yeah.
I don't even know how to answer that. I will say, you know, because I'm old school. With all the new tools out there, I always love it when people diss your basic Excel file because I'm like, you know, to me that was a game changer. You know, when Excel changed the world for us. It was kind of the first, you know, people see it as like a spreadsheet. It's really a rudimentary like coding language the way I see it. You know, with if you know what you're doing, you can write some mean formulas. I've always joked I could build a robot in Excel. But I think that, you know, just some of your basic stuff it's pretty cool if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I would, great answer, by the way. That's a tough, pretty tough question. So what are some of the top challenges you see in 2015 for starting to look and analyze and use the intelligence from data?
Well, I think, you know, one of the big challenges is, again, companies are becoming more and more comfortable looking at, you know, data and looking at the analytics. And, again, some of them have added, you know, new staff to handle this and help their operations and management teams. Some people are just kind of adapting and changing with the times, you know. But everyone's becoming a little more technologically savvy. And a little more data savvy, and I think that's a good thing. It also presents a new realm of challenges because, again, there's the opportunity to misinterpret things, and people are wanting things more and more defined on a micro level. So, you know, again, that trend of, okay, that's what's going on, you know, in the United States, or that's what's going on in California or Texas. What's going on in this zip code or on this block? Or, you know, they really want that targeted. And that's, you know, something new to us. You know, we've always knew that that was coming, but for it to come this fast and from more and more people asking for, you know, information that's just so specifically targeted. And then, again, when you, you know, you mentioned about the volume of data, when you have 20 years of information to analyze, you know, you get a feel for what's right and what's wrong on a larger scale. But when, you know, this is kind of a new thing for us to look at it on this micro scale, and just making sure your trust level is where it needs to be, and your confidence level that you're reporting things that are accurate, especially if they're going to be making decisions based on this. You know, that's a new challenge for us because it's something we haven't done. It's new to us as well, and I think a lot of companies are finding that again, the volume and the tools have allowed them to do things they've never done before. And you know, again, you want to make sure you're doing the right thing and that you're absolutely confident in what you're looking at and the decisions you're making.
Well, and I know one of the challenges that I definitely see is, you know, when dealing with data and the modeling and anywhere from setting up, asking the right questions, to looking at the data, to creating some actionable, like, tasks, you know, or things that you can do with the data, that's all very math intensive. And so the skill gap for data scientists, the number of them and the people that are actually like really, really good at that, I think that's where it's kind of like developers, like mobile developers, hard to find, you know, very, you know, more scarce and more scarce all the time. That to me is probably the single biggest threat to like the new era of data, is people that are really, really good at doing the analysis, doing the heavy lifting on the math.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. And you know, we like to joke at our company that, you know, I work with some really smart people, and you might say, oh well, this person's in the top 1%, you know, in IT development, or this person's in the top 1% in you know, math and analytical capability. But the difference between the top, you know, 0.1% within that 1%, you know, that is leaps and bounds. And again, those people that are just absolutely brilliant are you know, few and far between. And the rest of us have to make do, us mere mortals like you and me, Brian. But you know,
fair point.
I think that again, some of the technology is the great equalizer. But again, that, you know, I've always said that math to me is a universal language. It's the language of business. You know, it transports across cultures and continents. And you know, if you want to speak the language of business, you got to understand what numbers mean, whether that's a balance sheet or whether that's in metrics and analytics. And we're seeing that now more than ever.
Perfect. Well, we got about 2 minutes left, so very, very quickly, tell us about your 20 years anniversary in January, your Global Best Practices event, and we'll wrap it up from there.
Yeah, so I believe it's around the 19th or 20th of January. We're having a 20th year celebration in Dallas, Texas, so it shouldn't be too cold there for anyone coming to visit us, and we'll be honoring a lot of the industry leaders in the restaurant space. Again, that's one of our main client bases, and we got some great speakers on tap, and we get to see some really great people. The hospitality industry could not be greater people to do business with, and just wonderful people who know how to have a good time.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Michael, thanks for coming on Thug Metrics. It's good to talk with you again. Great conversation. Make sure that you get your downtime for the holidays, and we maybe look forward to seeing you in January sometime.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks. Well, folks, we're out of here, and have a good rest of the day.